We're holding on page Lamed in Bava Metzia, Ois Lamed as well. We learned yesterday about the unusual size of Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and several other Chachamim, one of them being Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara had used the expression Evrei, which we had a variety of different explanations what body part that means, or even I forgot to mention Akosiv means, it may not even mean a specific body part at all, it just means they're Taiva. In any case, so now, having mentioned that, the Gemara mentions something else unusual about Rabbi Yochanan. I am left over from the beautiful people of Yerushalayim. Meaning, if you want to get an idea of what the people of Yerushalayim looked like before the Churban, you can take a look at me. Tosfos explains, he doesn't mean he himself wasn't from Yerushalayim before the Churban. He lived long after the Churban. The Rambam tells us that when he summarizes the development of Torah Sheba'al Peh, and when it was written down, that the Yerushalmi was compiled by Rabbi Yochanan and completed about 300 years after the Churban by Sheni. So Rabbi Yochanan lived quite some time after the Churban. What he means is that he was descended from a family that lived in Yerushalayim before the Churban, and his appearance is a vestige of what theirs there, of what theirs was. So like this, for example, when we say in Eicha, that B'nei Tzion HaYikarim HaMesuloyim B'Paz, that they were as beautiful as gold, and various other psukim that we see there and in other places of how beautiful the people of Yerushalayim were, so now you have some idea. So the Gemara says, Hayman deboi mechsi shufri de Rabbi Yochanan, if now, in later generations, you don't have Rabbi Yochanan to see, so how do you get an idea of how beautiful and radiant his face was? He should start by taking a silver cup that is new from the silversmith. So it's still hot, it's still glowing from the fire that it was just made in. Fill it with seeds, with kernels of a red pomegranate. Put a crown of a wreath of red roses around the top of the cup. And place it between the sun and the shade, like an area that's half in the sun and half shadowed. The glow that you're going to see, the glow that you see comes off it on the ground. And that gives you an idea of the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan. So in Parshat Pshat, it means exactly that. In other words, such a thing would give a very beautiful glow. The Olos Ephraim from the Kliya, the Jerushim from the Kliyaka gives a symbolic explanation of it. He says that the silver cup new from the silversmith, among other things, represents the purity of the Neshama as it came to Lamaila. The pomegranate seeds represent that the Talmud Chacham doesn't learn Torah for himself. He learns it in order to spread to future generations as well, like seeds that will produce a plant. The red roses represent the power of the Torah itself, and between the sun and the shade, among other things, represents the fact that he works to bring the light of the light of Elikos into the shade and the darkness of the world. So now, when you put all those together, then you have a semblance of the beauty of what Rabbi Yochanan. You have some idea of some semblance of what Rabbi Yochanan was. So the Gemara says, though, Eini, is that so? So you're telling me Rabbi Yochanan was that handsome? But we learn in a Braise, in Bava Basra, Shufre de Rav Kahana me'in Shufre de Rav Abohu, the beauty of Rav Kahana was a semblance of that of Rav Abohu. There was a lot of different Rav Kahanas in Shas. We had one Rav Kahana that we had at the end of Bava Kama, the whole story where he killed a would-be Moser and then had to run away to Eretz Yisrael. But here we're talking about, since we're going from a generation to a previous one, then this has to be a later Rav Kahana. There was, for example, a Rav Kahana who was one of the Rebbeim of Rav Ashi. So maybe it means him, or maybe it means one of the other ones. In any case, so his beauty was a semblance of the beauty of Rav Abohu. The Shufre de Rav Abohu made Shufre de Yaakovinu. In turn, Rav Abohu's appearance reflected that was a semblance of the beauty of Yaakov Avinu. The Yaakov Avinu me'en shufre de Adam Rishon, and Yaakov Avinu in turn is a semblance of the beauty of Adam Rishon. The Gemara there continues in Bava Kama that Adam Rishon himself, like he couldn't even just his heels when he's buried in the Maris Machpelah. The Gemara mentions over there are like two radiant suns. So now, generation after generation, you have a semblance left of that. The either of Yochanan like Kachashivlei, and Rabbi Yochanan is missing in that list. It should have he would have gone between Rabbi Bohu and Yaakov Avinu because he was Rabbi Bohu's Rebbe. So why is he not there? And the answer is Shani Rabbi Yochanan to Hadras Ponim like Havyalei. The answer is Rabbi Yochanan is different because he didn't have Hadras Ponim. Rashi says that means beard. You have the famous Sefer Hadras Ponim Zaken from a Moshe Wiener takes its name from this Rashi, from the Dibra Maschil and Rashi's own comment. So he didn't have a beard. Now, what are we going to say? Shaved it? Rahman al-Islam? No. I mean, it could be he never grew one. Some people naturally don't grow one. It could also be, the Gemara mentions in Nazir that when Rabbi Yochanan was very old, he had no more armpit hair because it all fell out. So it could be also, as Rabbi Yochanan got old, maybe his beard fell out as well. Those of us who remember Rabbi Cyril Friedman being here in his later years here in the Shul, all of Shalom, then he lost pretty much all of his beard before he was Nifter. That's the point of Rashi. Marashah says you don't really need to say that. It's true he had a beard, but there's Yifei Toyar and there's Yifei Mara. They're not really the same thing. Rashi brings on the Pasuk when it says that Rochel was Yifas Toyar, Yifas Mara, and the same thing in this week's parasha when it says about Yosef, Yifei Toyar, Yifei Mara. Those are two different things. One is the appearance and the shape of the face, and the other one is the glow of it. So Rabbi Yochanan had one, but he didn't have the other, and therefore he doesn't belong in this list together with Rav Kahana and Rabbi Bohu and the rest of them. Ulas Ephraim says, following his derech, that what it means is, as great as Rabbi Yochanan was, he didn't make sure that people should have enough hadras ponim for him. He was too familiar with the people around him, and therefore they didn't respect him as much as they should have. So he goes on to say, in other words, there's the idea, Tamid Chacham, he has to be mashpia on his people, but he also has to keep himself in a way, says the Ulas Ephraim, that there has to be a certain healthy distance that they should have respect for him. And Rabbi Yochanan didn't do that, and therefore the Gemara says that he didn't have Hadras Ponim. Okay. The Gemara continues, in this connection of Rabbi Yochanan being very handsome, Rabbi Yochanan have a ozel the Yosef Ashari Tvila. Rabbi Yochanan would go and sit by the gates of the mikveh, where the local women would go to Toivel. Omar, he says, Ki Sokan Vnois Yisrael Mitvilas Mitzvah, when the Jewish women come up from Toiveling for the Mitzvah, Lifgu Ubi, they should meet up with me and see me. Ki Hechidu Lahevelahu Bni Shapiri Kabosi Gmiri Araisa Kabosi. This way they'll have children who will be as handsome and beautiful as me and as knowledgeable in Torah as me. We know that what the couple has in mind when they're having relations has a tremendous influence on their children. And you have it in connection with even with animals. You have the story with Yaakov and the sticks over there with the sheep. So like this, they'll have Rabbi Yochanan's face in mind, and that way it'll have a very much of an effect on their children. In particular, it's brought dinner, and then it's brought what the woman sees, what the first thing that she sees after she comes out of Toveling, after she comes out of the mikveh, has a very powerful effect on her machshavas and therefore on her ruchnius and on her children and all of that. For which reason, actually, it actually mentions in Shulchan Aruch that if the first thing she sees after coming out of the mikveh is a dover tameh, then if at all possible, she should tovel again. For that reason, you have nowadays, you have the mikveh ladies this way, the first one that she sees when she comes out of the mikveh is a Jewish woman. So in the same way, Rabbi Yochanan was kind of filling that role. Tosfos points out that the Gemara mentions in Psachim that if a man meets up with a woman when she's coming from Tzvilas Mitzvah, then it's a problem. It causes either him or who, or it causes that either he or she will have Ruach Znunim, a spirit of Znus. So then how is Rabbi Yochanan doing this? So first of all, Tosfos says that's because if they happen to meet up. Here Rabbi Yochanan is sitting there with Kvius, so it's not the same thing. Another answer Tosfos gives is that that's talking about where he meets up with her when she's directly coming out of the mikveh, before she's had a chance to get dressed. Here we're talking about something, naturally enough, there's going to be a Ruach Nunim involved, but here we're talking about he's sitting by the gates, by the door, of the when they're finished getting dressed and leaving, and then there's no problem. Tosfos in Psachim, where it also brings this, mentions a different answer over there, that the Gemara mentions over there that if that does happen, if a man meets up with a woman at that time, then he should say certain psukim. The Gemara says over there, he should say, Apostle Shoifach Buz on the Divim. There's two psukim that begin with those words, one in Tilim, Kapitel Chuk Zayin, the other one is in Iyov. So the Rishonim disagreed which one the Gemara meant, and Shulchan Aruch says you should say both. Marshall says that's very nice, but that really wouldn't help. That would help Rav Yochanan maybe, but if the woman herself, if she's going to have the Ruach Zunim, she's not going to necessarily know to say those psukim. So therefore, it's more glatt with one of the other answers that Tosfos gives over here, that the psukim are not necessary in this case. Omri Amri Le Rabbanon, so the other Chachamim said to Rav Yochanan, Lo Mistipi Mam Eini Bisha. Aren't you afraid of an Ayin Hara? You're putting your beauty on display over there, that everybody should come and gaze at you. Aren't you concerned about the effects of that? Amalahu, so he answers them, Anomi Zara de Yosef Kaasina, I come from the descendants of Yosef, Dole Sholope Ein Abisha, where Ayin Hara has no effect on Yosef. Dichtiv, as we find when Yaakov gives him the bracha, Bein Poras Yosef, Yosef is a fruitful son, Bein Poras Alei Oyin, a fruitful son, Alei Oyin, there's many different explanations among the Mephoshim, what the simple meaning of Alei Oyin is, but here, V'omer Ababohu, I'll tikri Alei Ayin, Ela Oylei Ayin. Not Alei Oyin, but Oylei Ayin, they go above the eye, so they're higher than the Ayin Hara, and it can't have any control or any power over them. This Gemara is brought in a number of other places in Shas, and in each place Rashi has a slightly different explanation of what the drosha of Alei Oyin is. One of them is that it means that it's not Alei, but Ali Oyin. Go away, Ayin. In other words, you have no power over me. I'm greater and higher than you. And then the Aruch also brings a few different explanations of what the drosha is exactly. But in any case, the idea is that the descendants of Yosef are immune to the Ayin Hara. The Gemara mentions in Sota that has to do with the events of our parasha. Yosef is being pursued by Ishus Potiphar, and he doesn't want to have anything to do with her. So because he controlled his eyes in that, then therefore he and his children were zeicha to this bracha being immune to Ayin Hara. Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina says I have a different source for that point. Also in Yaakov's bracha, when he's benching Menashe and Ephraim, he says, "V'yidgu l'roi v'kerev ha'aretz." They should multiply like fish in the midst of the earth. So what's the comparison to fish? Ma dogim shebayam mayim machasim osam. Fish in the water are covered by the fish in the sea are covered by the water. Veina ayin shelatus behem, and therefore the eye has no control over them. It can mean the ayin hara, or it can mean the ayin hara. It can mean the eye in general because you can't see them under the water. Af Zarasha Yosef in Ayin Shalatas Mahem, the same way Yosef's descendants, the eye has no power over them. So therefore Rabbi Yochanan says, I have nothing to worry about. Marsha says another explanation of well, among the many explanations of Alei Oyin and Oylei Ayin and all of that can also mean Marsha says the word Alei can also be Meloshen Ta'ola, as in the tough is often a prefix that means something that makes something happen, which means a healing, that Yosef's descendants have a healing, a refuah against the Ayin Hara. In fact, Marsha also points out that historically we find, so in the first census in the Midbar, Shevet Yosef, if you count Menashe and Ephraim together, was kind of average. They were large, but not unusually large. Menashe was a smaller Shevet, Ephraim was a little larger. They were both somewhere, they were one of the larger ones, but not the largest. But you come to the second census in Parshas Pinchas, and the two of them together, Shevet Menashe in particular, grew enormously in the Midbar. They grew by over 20,000 people. The largest increase in any Shevet. And at that point, the two of them together, Menashe and Ephraim, are 85,000 plus, which is more than the descendants of any other single son of Yaakov. So already they're having that bracha of Yud Gol Aroiv, and even more when they come into Eretz Yisrael, in fact, and when they're dividing up Eretz Yisrael, the Pasuk describes how they complain to Yeshua that we don't have enough territory for all of us. And Yeshua tells them there's forests over there you can clear, etc., etc. In fact, there's even an explanation, Marshall doesn't mention it over here, but there's also an explanation even, as much as they grew in the Midbar, even more so, Bekerev Ha'aretz, once they entered Eretz Yisrael, there was an even greater population increase, proportionately, in these two Shvatim, Menashe and Ephraim, so much so that now they have a complaint to Yeshua, the Eretz Yisrael is being divided only among those, and a plot of land is being given only to each person who was 20 years old when they entered Eretz Yisrael. But here, all of a sudden, in Eretz Yisrael, our birth rate has exploded, and now there are many more large families over here who are not going to get plots of land of their own, and what are we supposed to do?
It's after F of Sheamus Menashe is in Evo.
This is even a half an MRNA where you haven't yet, yeah. So in any case, we see that they're immune to the Iron Heart, and we see Ben Podasiosi, as Marshall points out, is Molotion Pruru. An interesting point that a couple of them before him deal with, the question over here, is that Rabbi Yochanan wants that these women who come from Toveling should have children who are as beautiful and handsome as him, and as great Talmud Chacham as him. The question is, you have the famous story in Masechta Tainis, where Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah, the famous Tanya, Rabbi Yeshua, was not particularly handsome, and the emperor's daughter asks him, how does that come about? Chachma before Arab, a Kli Mechor, and he explained that after a whole mushal and a whole thing with the wine spoiling and everything, he explains to her that very often that's how it is, that Chachma of Torah tends to last more by people who are not so handsome. So then why is Rabbi Yochanan wanting that people should be handsome like him? So that's actually one answer, is that he's saying that they should test. So that's the point. Yom Yaakov says he was able to have both. He's able to be handsome and be a great Talmud Chacham, and he wants that these women should also have like that as well. Chacha shouldn't have to be, that their children's Chacham Mefu'ara should have to be in a Kli Mechor. It should, Chacha, they should be able to have the best of both. In addition, also, Ben Yehoyada makes the point that he's saying also, when he says they should be as handsome as me, he means also they should have my quality as well of being like some Shevet Yosef and being immune to Ayin Hara. Otherwise, what good is it going to do them to be handsome if they're going to be struck by an Ayin Hara? So he's saying that I want that they should have that as well. They should be able to inherit that bracha from me as well.
In the mikveh, are you allowed, maybe in the outside room, to put on, let's say, a rubber picture?
Are you allowed to put a rebbe picture in the outside room of a mikveh? I have no idea. You have to ask the mikveh ladies here. Based on what we're saying, maybe. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Okay. So the Gemara tells, now here's another story in which Rabbi Yochanan's beauty is highlighted. Yoimachad have a kasochi Rabbi Yochanan b'yarden. One day Rabbi Yochanan was bathing in the Yarden River. Chazir Rishlokish. Rishlokish saw him. The shovel the Yarden Abbasri, and he jumped into the Yarden after him. Now the vort is, since we said before, Rabbi Yochanan did not have a beard, so Rish Lakish may, so some of the Mephoshim talk about that Rish Lakish may have thought that this is a woman, so he wants to seduce her or whatever. Anyway, Omalei, so Rabbi Yochanan,
he was the head of the
robbers. So Tosfos mentions a point over here based on this Gemara and based on a few other Gemaras in Shas, that it comes out actually that Rish Lakish, right now he was the head of a band of robbers, but before that he had actually at one time been a Talmud Chacham. Then he had gone off the derech. Now Rabbi Yochanan sees an opportunity to get him to become a Baal Tshuva again and to resume what he's supposed to be again, a great Talmud Chacham, not the head of a band of robbers. So he jumps into the river to after Rabbi Yochanan. Omalei, so Rabbi Yochanan tells him, Chelach la'oraisa, your strength, that tremendous power and strength of yours, should be used for Torah. Or Marsha says another meaning of it as well. This power of yours, this power that your Yetzirah is giving to you to use for your robbery, if you use it for Torah, then that power of the Yetzirah itself will be weakened. The Gemara mentions, well, here we're going to have in our story over here in a minute, and the Gemara mentions in other places that Torah weakens a person's gashmiyistika strength. There's an expression now that everyone brings in Tanya from the Zohar, when the body is strong, the neshama is weak, and vice versa. So as the neshama is going to get strengthened by Torah, then the gashmiyistika body gets weaker. So Marsha says that's another meaning of chelach la'oraisa. Amalei, Rish Lakish answers back, shufrach l'noshi, your beauty is roi for women. Either, in other words, I thought you were a woman, that kind of beauty is more appropriate for women to possess, or it means you could be using your beauty to attract women. Why is called Reish Lakish, by the way? So Reish later on came to stand for Reb Shimon, as we're going to have in the story over here. His band of robbers also called him Reb, either because Rebbe in general means master or leader, or because, as Tosfos says, he was originally a Talmud Chacham. So as far as Lakish, Lakish may have been his father's name. Some say that Lakish maybe is the town where he lived. And according to that, Reish Lakish would be the leader of Lakish. In any case, that was so he says, so that's what he says to Rabbi Yochanan. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan tells him, if you do tshuva, And I recognize, after all, what capabilities you have. Yehivno achoisi to shapira minoi. Then I will give you my sister in marriage, and she is even more beautiful than I am. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Kiddushin that Rabbi Yochanan was one of those kailach diki yisoimim, like Esther, and like Abaya. His father passed away while he was in the womb, and his mother passed away in childbirth. So, first of all, then obviously the sister had to be older than Rabbi Yochanan, but more to the point, also it means that they're both yisoimim. So Rabbi Yochanan is the one who has to handle things as far as his sister's shidduchim. So I'll arrange that shidduch, and you can marry my sister. So Rish Lakish accepted on himself. Fine, he's going to do tshuva and come and learn Torah and become and learn Torah with Rabbi Yochanan. Boil meder lasuyim money. Now he wanted to go jump back across the river to get his clothing. Vleimotzi, but he couldn't. Just the fact that he had accepted on himself that he's going to learn Torah before he even started, that already weakened his gashmiyistik koyach, and now he didn't have that power that he had before. So one point of that is exactly that the Torah weakens the goof and strengthens the neshama. There's an interesting explanation also that's brought in the English Ein Yaakov from a Rav in Eretz Yisrael, that the vort is a lot of, you know how we have a lot of times a person may not have, objectively a person may not have the physical koyach to do something, but they have a rotzin for it, and that itself gives them extra koyach. You know, sometimes you hear in the news of a mother that lifts up a car off her child. You know, b'derech hateva, she'd never be able to do that, but all of a sudden, her rotzin gives her that extra power. So now the vort is, once Rish Lakish is realizing the importance of Torah, and that his previous life is nothing compared to that, so like he doesn't even have the cheshek, he doesn't even have the rotzin anymore for his old life, and in token of that, he can't even go back and get his clothes anymore. Not because he doesn't have the physical koyach, but because at this point he doesn't have the rotzin, and that itself makes him sluggish. Okay.
That should be a good explanation why the yeshiva often should not go to the army.
I think that's true. They're not an army. Yeah.
They are too weak.
Yeah, very true. So Achriye v'Asniye, so Rabbi Yochanan taught him Mikra, which is Tanakh, and Mishnah, the Shavri Gavri Rabbah, and he made him into a great Talmud Chacham, and throughout Shas we have Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish appear all over the place. Tosfos refers over here, there's actually some places where we find in Shas where Rish Lakish is able to tell Rabbi Yehuda Nesiya, Tach mekublani me'avoisai, I have the Kabbalah from my ancestors, the following teaching in Torah. Which is again an idea, the point that Rish Lakish had originally been himself from a family of Talmud Chacham, and he himself had originally been, and then he went off the derech, and now Rabbi Yochanan is putting him back on the right path. Many, many years passed at this point. And now, one day, Yom Echad have a Miflegi Beit Medrash. One day, they were arguing in the Beit Medrash. In between, by the way, I mean, we don't know when this happened. The Pashtas, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rish Lakish were younger light then. And Rish Lakish, after all, wasn't even married yet. Or Rabbi Yochanan's sister, for that matter, if she's older than him and she's not married, it can't have been, Rabbi Yochanan himself can't have been that old either, otherwise she would have really been an old maid by that point. But anyway, one thing is that Rabbi Shuda Goyen tells us in his Igeres that Rabbi Yochanan served as a Rosh Hashiva for 80 years. And the story that we're going to have over here happened at the end of, near the end of Rabbi Yochanan's life. So this is many, many years later. Yes, I mean that maybe the 80 is a mistake, maybe Rabbi Shuda Goyen means to say 60 years, but even so, it's still a long time later. Anyway, Yom Echad have a Miflegi Beit Medrash. One day they were arguing on the following point in the Beit Medrash. Now, we know that metal kalim are able to be mekabel truma, and so there's a Mishnah in Masechta Kalim that lists a variety of metal tools or weapons with blades. Hasayif, a sword, vasakin, a knife, vapigyon, and a spear, vaharoimach, another type of spear. Umago yod, a hand sickle, the kind that you hold in your hand to harvest grain. Umago kotzer, or a harvest sickle, a larger kind that you use when you're harvesting an entire field. Me'emesan mekablin truma, from what point on in the manufacture of these kalim are they mekabel truma? So the rule is meshas gmar malachdan, from when the malacha of them is completed. That's a general rule. With kalim, they're generally not mekabel truma until the malacha of them is finished. Me'emesan gmar malachdan. Now came the argument, at what point with these kalim is considered the gmar malacha? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mishat Sirfan Bekivshan. Rabbi Yochanan says once you fire them, once you shape them and bake them or whatever, not bake them, whatever you do with them in the oven to make them into kelim, then at that point they're done and now they're makabel Torah. Rish Lakish Amar Mishat Tzachin B'Mayim. Rish Lakish says that's not enough. They also have to be polished with water. So either one possibility is it means exactly that, like after they've cooled off, you apply some water to them to make them shiny and glinty. And the other explanation, somebody's showing them understand that it means that after you make them in the oven, in the kiln, after that, or after you shape them, whatever, after the blacksmith shapes them with his tools, after that, you have to quench them in water, you have to dip them in water in order to harden them, that would be b'shiyat tzachin b'mayim. The point is that after that, they're shiny and glinty. And in particular, with weapons, that makes a big difference, because with weapons, it's not just when Rahman al-Tzlan, you see somebody with a sword coming, it's not just the sword itself, the fact that it's a deadly weapon, it's also, it has a glint to it, it has a shine, that tends to make the victim scared of that. We find Pesukim, we find in Yechezkel, for example, where it talks about not just the sharpness of a weapon, but the glint of it. So Rabbi Yosef Lakish says that's an important factor in it. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan says, Lista b'listiyuse yada. A robber knows of his robbery. In other words, you used to be a listim, and therefore you're familiar with this kind of thing. Now, how can Rabbi Yochanan say such a thing? Isn't that terrible? I know it's dividing. So Marashah says that actually what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that he's not trying to bring up Rish Lakish's past in a derogatory way. He's saying, on the contrary, he means to say it kind of in a complimentary way. You have experience with this kind of thing, so you know that it's not just the sharpness of the weapon, it's the glint of the weapon that makes the difference, and therefore I have to agree that you have a valid point. So Rabbi Yochanan is certainly not meaning a nas dvarim with it, but unfortunately Rish Lakish took it the wrong way. Amalei, so Rish Lakish says, umay ahanesli. So what good have you done to me? What have you benefited me? Hasam Rebbe Karuli, Hacha Rebbe Karuli. There, when I used to be a robber, they called me Rebbe. Either because, again, the word Rebbe is a generic term meaning a master or a leader. We find that in some places in Shas. Or, as Tosfos says, because I used to be a Talmid Chacham, and they recognized that, and they still called me by my old title Rebbe. Hacha Rebbe Karuli, and here they also call me Rebbe. So what have I gained? Omalei, now how are they talking this way? So let's learn the words of the Gemara, and then we'll talk about a number of different explanations that Mefarshim give what's going on over here. Omalei, so Rabbi Yochanan answers him, Ahanoi loch, what I benefited you, da kervinach tachas kanfei ha-shechina, that I brought you under the wings of the Shechina before you were nowhere as far as Yiddishkeit is concerned, and now I brought you to Torah. What do you mean, what benefit did I do for you? So what is going on over here? So again, Marsha says that to begin with, when he had said yada, he didn't mean in a derogatory way. He meant that it means that you have the greater expertise. But then Rish Lakish is answering that. So what are you telling me then? That you think then that you benefited me by teaching me this halacha. You're saying I know this only from practical experience. But you should know something, says Rish Lakish. I used to be a Rebbe also. I used to be a Talmid Chacham, as Tosfos is saying. I knew this halacha long before that. Not because I have experience as a robber, but because that was how I learned. That the polishing of the weapon is the Gemar Malacha of it. So Rabbi Yochanan now unfortunately misunderstood what Rish Lakish meant by that. When he says Maya Hanasli, so again, according to Marsha, Rish Lakish is saying, not what did you benefit me, Bechal. Of course Rish Lakish knows that being brought to be a Talmid Chacham is an enormous benefit. What he means is, in this particular halacha, don't think that you benefited me, you should know I know this halacha from long before I was ever a robber. But Rabbi Yochanan misunderstood what Rish Lakish is saying and thinks that it means he's putting down the whole thing that he made him a Talmid Chacham. Another explanation is that when he says my ahanis li, another explanation is that he's Eitz Yosef says ahanis can mean meloshen hoyna, meloshen hoyna asdvarim. So when he says, L'stob l'siyusab yada, so he's saying, as Marashah says, and as Etz Yosef says, that yeah, it means, you know, I have to concede Rish Lakish has a valid point. He's more experienced in this kind of thing. So he doesn't mean it in a derogatory way, but Rish Lakish understood it to be a slur against him. So he's saying, Maya Hanasli, how could you do a Nostradam to me like this? And the fact is, even when I was there, they also gave me covered like now. So in other words, the point is also that, so Etz Yosef explains that also what Rish Lakish is saying with this is like this. So you're mentioning the fact that I was a robber. You're thinking, therefore, apparently, Rabbi Yochanan, that why did I do tshuva? Because I wanted the covered of being a Talmid Chacham. You should know, says Rish Lakish, I didn't need that covered. I had that covered all along. They were calling me Rebbe. Don't think that I did tshuva because of covered. I did tshuva l'shem shemayim. So how could you tell me? Zchor ma'asecha l'shonim. How could you bring up my past to me? But unfortunately, then Rabbi Yochanan misunderstood and thought, Maya Hanasli means what benefit did you give me? And therefore Rabbi Yochanan answered sharply like that, that I benefited you by bringing you a Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. Then there's an explanation. Ben Yehoyada brings up a point that the Hossam and the Hocha can refer to Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, respectively. Even in Bavel, Rish Lakish is saying they respect me as a Talmud Chacham. So I didn't really need you to make me well known in the Jewish world, in the Torah world. And Rabbi Yochanan says, yes, but the fact is, it all began with you learning here in the Beis Medrash with me. In any case, Cholosh Gaita did Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan felt bad. However, we understand what went on over here is that Rabbi Yochanan is now very disturbed. It sounds like Rish Lakish has expressed himself in such a way that that he had become a Ben Torah, that this idea that he had left his previous life is not important, and that he had the same cover, or he had the same everything as he had before. So Rabbi Yochanan felt very bad about that. Cholosh Rish Lakish, and the result of that was that Rish Lakish became very sick. And throughout Shas, we have the Kepeda of a Talmud Chacham has tremendous, terrible effects. And the vote would be, there's an explanation that over here Rabbi Yochanan thought that this is a slur against the whole point of learning Torah and the whole point of doing Shuvah and the whole Rebbe Talmud relationship, and therefore he can't just overlook it. Well, Asoi Achse Kabachya, Rabbi Yochanan's sister, who we said before, is Rish Lakish's wife. He did end up marrying her. So she came and cried to him, please daven for my husband. Omrele, she says, that even if not for me, Asei Bishvil Bonai, do it for the sake of my children. They're going to be left Yisraelim. Omrele, so he tells her, you know, the Pasuk says, Ozvi Yisemecha Vani Achaya. The Pasuk says, leave your orphans, I'll keep them alive. In other words, and so it's a Lashon HaPasuk in Yirmiyah. In other words, the fact that if Rish Lakish passes away, he's going to leave orphans. That's not a reason enough to be moichel on what he said and to daven for him. She says, "Asei b'shvil amanusi, do it for the fact that I myself am going to be left in Amona." Amalah, so he answers her with the end of that same pasuk, "Amonistecha olai tivtachu, your widows can trust in me." Meaning, in other words, again, So those are important factors, and I'm sorry that you have to go through that, but that doesn't excuse what Rish Lakish did or what Rabbi Yochanan perceived Rish Lakish to have done. Noch nafshe did Rabbi Shimon Lakish. So sure enough, Rabbi Shimon Lakish passed away. V'habakom etzdar Rabbi Yochanan basrei tuba. Now Rabbi Yochanan felt very bad. He couldn't find another Talmud Chacham of the caliber of Rish Lakish. So again, in other words, as much as he regretted that Rish Lakish had said such a thing, which in his perception was a bizoyan to Torah, nevertheless, now he realizes the fact is that Rish Lakish, there's no great Talmud Chacham of his caliber. Omru Rabbanon, so the other Chachamim said, Man lezel lesvi l'dayte, who should go and calm down Rabbi Yochanan, make him feel better, make him realize that there's other people of Rish Lakish's caliber that he can learn with. Nezer Rabbi Loza ben Pedos, let Rabbi Loza ben Pedos go, de mechad vin shmeitze, his teachings in Torah are very sharp, he really knows his stuff. So he can take over where Rish Lakish left off. Also, Yosef Kamei, so Rabbi Lazar went and sat before Rabbi Yochanan as a Talmud. Kol Milsa to have Omer Rabbi Yochanan, whenever Rabbi Yochanan would say something in Torah, Omalei, Rabbi Lazar would tell him, Tanya de Messiah Loch, there's a braisa that supports what you're saying. after a while, this Omar, after a while, Rabbi Yochanan says, Ak bar Lakisha, you think you're like the son of Lakish? You think you're like Rish Lakish? Let me explain to you the difference. Bar Lakisha, kehava aminim milsa, when I would say something in Torah, have a makshili chofdalad kushiyosa, he would ask 24 questions on what I just said. Maybe, okay, Anaf Yosef says maybe 24 is a guzma, but still a large number of questions. We'll talk about it in a second. Marsha gives a reason for the number. So he would ask 24 questions. I have to answer him, have to be able to answer him with 24 answers. And therefore the teaching in Torah becomes very clarified and very wide open. And now we all understand it well, because now we've all gone through and chewed it over. What are you doing, Rabbi Lazar? You're telling me each time I say something, there's a braisa that supports what you say. What, you think I don't realize that what I'm saying is correct, that I need your braisa to support it? So now Rabbi Yochanan realized, and now it really hit home to him, how much he lost with Rish Lakish's passing. As far as the 24 questions and answers, Marsha explains, 24 plus 24 is 48. Then you have the topic itself, makes 49. That represents the Memtes Ponim LaTorah, the 49 different facets of learning Torah. So now, between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, they had covered all of them. I forgot to mention, by the way, also, Chidush Ge'onim on the side over here gives another explanation of what went on over here before between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, what Rish Lakish had said about the polishing of the weapon, and Rabbi Yochanan saying, Lista blis yusta yada, and the whole back and forth. What happened, again, the question is, what Rabbi Yochanan heard from Rish Lakish that was so deeply offensive that now he couldn't even be moichel him? So Chidush Ge'onim on the side over here brings another point over here as well, besides the few that we said so far. Where does Rabbi Yochanan get that as soon as the keli is finished being made in the oven, then already it's roi lekabel turma? So he didn't just come up with that on his own. He learned that from his rebbein. Now the Shlokish is coming to argue with that, so it's not. And he's saying that the way of the world is that people polish their weapons in order to make them scary. So therefore, it has to be abshiyat sasikul. So Rabbi Yochanan says, listen. If it was a matter of just weapons that are used by listim is one thing, but you know, in the list over here, we have also sickles that are used for harvesting. Those don't need that kind of polishing. So therefore, so how could you be arguing with what I learned from my rebbein? If you're arguing, then you're doing it only on the basis of your expertise with weapons. So now when Rish Lakish says, Rish Lakish says, Maya Hanasli, what good did you do me? What he means by that, besides the explanations that we said, what good did you do me as far as you think I was in it for the cupboard, or why did you anos dvarim? Here, Chidush Ge'onim says another, brings from a sefer called Derech Hayasher, that brings another explanation. Rish Lakish is saying, wait a minute. If in Torah, we're not allowed to come up with our own svaris, if we just have to follow the Kabbalah of our Rebbeim, then what's the point of it? Then what's the point of learning Torah? You have to have the ability to do pilpul, and we find in different places in the Gemara that Rish Lakish is an expert at pilpul, at analyzing and coming up with new conclusions. So Rabbi Yochanan tells him the purpose is you tachas kanfei ashchina, you lit up with the light of Torah. Not that you should be following your seichel anushi and your human logic and using that to be arguing against what we learned from our Rebbeim. Now later on, though, after Rish Lakish. You said that's what Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan at this point in the argument, is saying that you shouldn't. You want to use your Seichel Anushi to understand what was taught before you, fine, but not to go argue with it. But now, after Rish Lakish passed away, then all of a sudden Rabbi Yochanan realized that it's really not so. Now he realizes, looking back, when he's talking now with Rabbi Lazar, he said, and Rabbi Lazar again is every time supporting what he says, and Rabbi Yochanan says, that's not what I need. I need the questions and the terutzim. Now he realizes for the first time what Rish Lakish had been accomplishing all those years with his kashis and his terutzim and his pilpul and all that. It's not to argue against, it's not to create a new Torah chas v'shalom. It's rather to be mefalful. And even yes, sometimes that goes against what we learned, but Kabbalah from our Rebbeim. Nevertheless, that is a valid derech and Torah. And now for the first time, Rabbi Yochanan realizes that.
If the rabbi has a thing in Shari Aura about this back and forth, and he says the whole purpose is every time he asks a question, the teacher's got to come up with a deeper explanation, then that's going to have a conflict.
That's what the Gemara is saying, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that every time Rish Lakish would ask me 24 questions and I have to come up with an answer, yeah. So the Gemara continues. Have a ka'ozo v'kora mone v'kabachi. Rabbi Yochanan, now it really hit him what he lost with Rish Lakish. He was walking along and when ripping up his clothes and crying the Omer and saying, Hecha at Balakisha, Hecha at Balakisha. Where are you, Rish Lakish? Where are you, Rish Lakish? Now it really hit him what he lost. The Habakkuk Sadach, and he's crying out like that, Ad Shof Daitimine, until his mind left him. He couldn't handle it anymore. Bo Rabban and Rachmi Ale, the Chacham had to daven for Rachmanis for Rabbi Yochanan, v'noch nafshe, and he passed away. Rabbi Yochanan, the Pasha lost his mind over this. There's a vort from one of the Bali Amusa, one of the famous Bali Amusa of Chaim Shmulevitz, that they couldn't daven for him to recover his sanity, because what good would it do? As soon as he does, he's going to realize again what he lost and that there's no replacement for Rish Lakish, and he's going to again go into the same thing. So there's no choice at this point but to daven for him to daven, that is, that his neshama should have rest.
They can unite in Gan Eden.
So they can unite in Gan Eden and have and continue their discussions there, yeah. Yeah. The Yerushalmi actually says it a little bit differently. The end of the Yerushalmi doesn't tell the whole story, but it tells that for 3 years at the end of Rabbi Yochanan's life, he was too sick to attend the Beis Medrash, just like we're saying over here, because he wasn't completely well. But one day the Talmudim had a dream that tomorrow Rabbi Yochanan is going to come to the Beis Medrash and teach you something new in Torah, and sure enough the next day he did. So evidently there were periods even after this when Rabbi Yochanan was lucid enough to be teaching his Talmudim new things, but eventually, I guess it got to the point where that wasn't going to happen anymore. So that's what we're saying. Why he did it l'hatchila is basically based on various explanations. Is he understood Rish Lakish to have been putting down the whole point of learning Torah, to be saying that there was no gain in it, basically, and that's a very serious insult, or according to the explanation for Dusha Goinim, that he's putting down the whole idea of following one's Rebbein. And Rabbi Yochanan considered that's not something that you can overlook. But yeah, now he realized that after all, Rish Lakish was an irreplaceable Talmud Chacham, and especially according to Chiddush HaGaonim, the vort is that now he realizes that Rish Lakish's derech really has a place in Torah after all. Okay, Yom Yem Mashiach HaGaola Yudches Kislev. So the one of the explanations why Chassidus was revealed in our Davka in later generations. There's often a question: if Chassidus is so vital to Yiddishkeit, then why wasn't it revealed in earlier generations? So the darkness of Golus is getting worse and worse, as you have the expression in the Mishnah and Sotah, Kol Yom Meruba Kilosay Mishachaveroi. So therefore, you need a higher light in order to be able to overcome that darkness. Therefore, Nishmasa Daraisim, the Neshama of the Torah, was revealed. And that arouses, and that brings out the deeper koichas, the hidden koichas of the neshama, the sosim, the neshmasa, the hidden things of the neshama. And we're at the end of the time of Golos. Another point of it is that this is a sicha that ever talks about there seems to be two opposites in it, really. On the one hand, we say that it helps us overcome the choshech of Golos. Another way of looking at it is that we're at the end of time of Golos, and we have to be preparing for the Gola Asid Alavoy, and when you do a hachana, it always has to be a me'ain of what you're preparing for. So therefore, we have a me'ain, and we have a taste, a foretaste of the Gilul Asid Alavoy, like the famous thing in Kisrei HaRizal, which is brought la'alocha, among other things in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, he being the Bala Gaul of Asimcha, that on Erev Shabbos was supposed to taste from the Shabbos food, Teimer Chaim Zachu. So in the same way, we have a foretaste of the Torah Mashiach before Mashiach actually comes. In that Sicha, in Chelek Chof, the Rebbe goes on to explain how these two things mesh together. How they're not two, they seem to be two opposite explanations, but they both come together, and they both teach us something of what Chassidus is all about. Okay. Continuing with halachas of Hashkamas HaBoker from the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. So we were talking about, the Alter Rebbe talked about before, that a person should wake up even before dawn. In Madura Basra, the Alter Rebbe had gone on in detail about a person doing Tikkun Chatzos. So here in Madura Kama, the Alter Rebbe says that a person should get up before Ora Boker, before dawn, in order to petition the Eibishter, in order to plead by the Eibishter for daven. So that's that he should do that at the time when the Mishmaros are changing. So at the end of the first third of the night, and at the end of the second third of the night, and at the end of the night, those are the times when the Gemara tells us that the Eibishter, so to speak, remembers the Churban, and then therefore those are particularly times of Rotzin. So therefore, when a person davens at that time for the Churban and the Galus, then it's a more acceptable tefillah and more ready to be accepted by the Eidishter. So therefore, Yorah Shemayim should be taka at those times, be mase of a doyeg, troubled and distressed about at that time, and then pour out tachnunim about the Churban. As the passage says, Kumi Roini Valaila the Rosh Hashmuris, get up, cry out in the night at the beginning of the watches. So each of those thirds of the night, the Gemara tells us, at the beginning of the bracha of brachas is called a watch. There's a different watch of malachim that are singing to the Eibishter in each of those times. So at the beginning of each one of them, we're saying is an Eis Ratzon. Nevertheless, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that Torah and Tefillah has to be besimcha, Ivdu Es Hashem besimcha. So in other words, as much as the person is mates of a doyeg, is saddened over the Churban, that shouldn't prevent him from having simcha in learning Torah. As the Alter Rebbe himself explains in Tanya, you have the expression in Zoya, you have joy in one side of the heart, and then b'chia and crying in the other part, and they can be even simultaneously, as he brings from a piece in the Zoya over there, where Rashbi teaches Rebbe Lozer something new about a new dimension of understanding of Pnimius HaTorah about the Churban, and Rebbe Lozer was crying over the fact that it's about the Churban, but happy over the fact that he learned something new in Torah. Then the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that it's good to learn Torah Sheval Peh at that time, that a person should be studying Torah Sheval Peh at that time, and in general, a person should link the day and the night together with Torah or with Tefillah, both in the morning and in the evening. So, in other words, at the transition from morning to evening, and from evening to morning, a person should be learning Torah or should be davening. As far as this matter that we're saying that he should say tachanunim, the Alter Rebbe brings the famous expression, toiv ma'at b'kavona, mehar b'shalei b'kavona, better a little bit with kavona than a lot without, and the same thing with learning Torah. If a person has the capacity, the heart to understand, to be able to learn, should be spending more time at these times learning more than saying tachanunim, because Talmud Torah is greater than Iyun Tefillah. And in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about that nowadays, not necessarily is that so. Nowadays, our avodah is more avodah tefillah, but it also depends on what the person's capacities are and then different factors like that. Right.